Well, I'm thankful this morning that we can depend on the Lord. He is very dependable, and I wonder sometimes how much He can depend on us. Because that's, you know, any time we're trying to solve a dilemma, the more variables we can take out of the situation, the more confidently we can move in the right direction. And when we have trouble in life, I believe we can depend on God to be consistently available for us, to consistently be compassionate and be touched with the feelings of our infirmities. And then how much depends on us? Can we be consistent? So we have a little thought this morning, like for us, the Lord to help us write a couple words up here on the board. And I want to talk about profession. Or possession. Profession or possession. I began to kind of meditate on these thoughts and a situation from childhood come back to me. And there's some of you I know this is going to resonate with. Small children sometimes can have some very nonsensical arguments. Like this, why are you even talking about this? And I remember one of those that I had with some school classmates that I had. And it involved, it wasn't like just one boy arguing with another, but there was just this general, I don't know, conversation or argument going on that, about whose daddy could beat up the other person's daddy. Now, we were early grade school age, and honestly, I'd never seen a fight, like a serious fight. And I don't know if they had either, but every one of these were little boys, you know, probably the size of the little boys in our congregation here, and they are, you know, early, just barely school age, you know, and we were arguing about whose daddy could beat up the other person's daddy. I don't even know who brought the subject up. I want to think that I didn't, okay? And I don't know what conversations or conflicts little girls get into. I just know that is something that's generationally has happened amongst little boys. Because there's something about strength and courage and all of that that little boys are just gravitate to, and then immediately they begin to think about conflicts, physical conflicts. They just do. And so I don't remember entering in so much. It was just like I was a bystander. And what I remember is thinking, I don't know about what those daddies are like, but I know what mine's like. I remember the type of strength he displayed. And I was that age when I went with him, and I wasn't big enough to be really help to Dad other than try. I remember one time he took me with him, and my job was to hold this hammer that might have weighed 2 pounds up against the bottom of a sickle bar while he was coal riveting a sickle section on this sickle bar. In a combine header, and he was telling me, son, hold it up tight. And it's like a 2-pound hammer. And today we'd think, well, 2-pound hammer, that's nothing. But when you're maybe 5 or 6, holding a 2-pound hammer up against a rivet, that's a lot of work to do, you know. And I'm trying to hold that hammer up, and he's hitting on the rivet, and my hammer's bouncing off of the bottom. And in the process of all of this, Dad had chiseled. We didn't have cordless tools by any means, and we didn't have a grinder out there. And he was chiseling those rivets off with a hammer and a cold chisel, driving them out with a punch, and we'd put new ones in. And we didn't have anything but hand tools, literally. No power tools of any kind. And we're out there working, and something happened, and Dad hit his knuckle. I probably bounced my hammer and caused him to do it. I don't remember, but he hit his knuckle and just busted his knuckle or his finger open. And Dad never got mad. He never threw his tools. He just kept on working, and the blood was running down his finger, and he'd sling his hand like that every once in a while to sling the blood off and just kept working. I thought, boy, these fellas don't know what they're talking about when they said their daddy could beat up my daddy. You know, those are kind of things that the knowledge of how strong that, in my perception, how strong my dad was. So, I don't know what I thought about their dads at that time. I just knew that my dad was this enormously powerful person. He had in my little head, in that time, he had a lot of character, and he had a lot of physical strength, because today I look back and know that I was real. He took me along. He could have held that hammer up and tapped that rivet down, but he was trying to make me feel part of his, what he was doing and what of his life. And that's why it's so important. I don't want to go off on just a little bit of a tangent here. It's why it's so important for you fathers, young fathers, to take your children and do these type of things with them, where they can feel, even though they may look back in 20 years and say, you know, Dad was just babysitting me, really. But take your son along with you and show him how to apply himself. It's so valuable. So we'll get back on track now. I want us to think about profession and possession. And, you know, I had this great confidence that my dad was really a strong man. I saw this and I believed it. And it wasn't just that my dad went around flexing his muscles, because I never saw my dad doing that. It wasn't that I heard him brag, because I never heard him do that. But I saw something in action that was powerful in my little head. And I was probably, like I said, 4, 5, 6 years old at the most when this happened. And I think about those that have professed something and it been so hollow. That's where I'd like to start, is profession. I'd like for us to turn to the book of 1 Samuel, the 15th chapter. And the setting here is that through the prophet Samuel, Saul had been given instructions to go and to engage in conflict with one of the enemies of the Israelites. And Saul was the king, of the first king of the Israelites. And he had got specific instructions to go, and in verse 3 it says, of chapter 15, 1 Samuel, "Now go and smite Amalek, and utterly destroy all they have, and spare them not, to slay everything." Just wipe this nation off of the face of the earth. That was the instruction. And Saul went with his army. And I don't know why it didn't happen like that, but it didn't. But we pick up the story in verse 13. And it says, and Samuel came to Saul, and Saul said unto him, blessed be thou of the Lord. I have performed the commandments of the Lord. Now that's a profession, isn't it? I've performed the commandments of the Lord. I did what you told me to do. I'm professing to you that it's all done. It's all tidied up. Those of us that have worked with others, and maybe you've depended on somebody. Did you close all the gates? Yes, Dad. Yes, sir. I closed all the gates. Did you nail all the sheetrock up tight? Yes, I nailed it all up tight. Did you do this? Did you do that? You know, did you, I don't know what all the processes are. Did you, all of your occupations have been over the years, but did you do this? Did you complete your task? Yes, it's done. And maybe you're looking over behind the person that's talking to you and you can see it's not done. And you want to say, why are you telling me that? Why are you doing this? And Samuel said in verse 14, he said, and Samuel said, what meaneth then this bleating of the sheep in mine ears and the lowing of the oxen that I hear? Well, the commandment was that you would destroy all the livestock too. And what kind of explanation, if you tell me you did it, I'm professing to do it, then what's this? You know, if my dad had been a type of person that had dressed in a manner that, please bear with me for this illustration, but if my dad had dressed in a manner to try to display his physique, all right, and yet the first time I saw him pinch his finger, he went whimpering off and said, I'm done for the day, it would have changed my perspective of him completely. But what I saw was he possessed something and had never heard him profess to be extra strong. In fact, if you would have asked him, he said he probably would have said he wasn't. And yet I saw something displayed that was exceptional strength. All right? So Saul here said, I'm doing it. I did it exactly like you wanted me to do. And Samuel says, well, what's the explanation? Why do I hear some sheep bleating? Did you bring sheep with you? I don't know. Maybe Samuel was trying to give him an outside chance. Maybe he brought some sheep for lunch, you know, from home. But he wasn't supposed to hear the enemy's sheep because they were supposed to have destroyed all of that. The bottom line is, Saul did not possess what he professed. And you know, we could read the rest of this story and find out that it didn't turn out so good. It didn't turn out good for Saul, and it didn't turn out good for the Israelites. And it really, this story, if we follow it, and we might do that tonight, but if we follow this story to the end, oh, Saul, if you'd only possessed what you professed here, how much you could have avoided trouble down the road. But he didn't. So I'd like to go on to another profession. I'd like to go over to the New Testament and the 18th chapter of Luke. So let's turn over here to Luke, the 18th chapter. And we have a setting here where Jesus teaches a parable. And in this parable, he's talking about two men that come to the Lord, or in the presence of the Lord. And beginning in verse maybe 9, it says, and he spake this parable unto certain which trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. If somebody is trusting in themselves that they are righteous and despising others, I would venture that they have 18th chapter of Luke, the 9th verse, I would venture that they have a profession of some sort. So in verse 10 it says, two men went up into the temple to pray, the one a Pharisee and the other a publican. Two opposite walks of life. One of them was, you might say, employed by the religious, Jewish religious system. The other was subservient and conforming to the Roman rulers of that time. And they were, you might say, a tax collector. They were very much involved in the everyday temporal affairs. And they probably, whether they were conscientious or not, they were always accused. How many people really have a high esteem of people that assess taxes? Everybody I know of thinks the tax assessor is going around looking for something he can raise your value on, you know. None of us enjoy necessarily our taxes going up, getting that property tax statement in the mail and realize that it's more this year than it was last year. And that's the type of person this publican was. And they both went to the same place. It says here, two men went up into the temple to pray. Two totally different walks of life. And when they came in here, the Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself. That's kind of a clue there. He said, God, I thank thee that I'm not as other men are, extortioners. You reckon he's trying to cast a reflection there? Do you think he knew what this other fellow was? I think he did. I think he went in there and he thought, ha, of all days for me to come to the temple and walk in at the same time as this guy. Well, I'll let him know a little something about what I think of him while I'm here. Lord, I thank you. I'm not like this other guy, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, and that's going out on a limb, or even as this publican. What kind of prayer is that? But he had a profession, didn't he? He said, I fast twice in the week. I give tithes of all that I possess. Lord, I'm doing some good stuff for you, and you know it. That's what he was saying. And the publican stood afar off, and he wouldn't even lift up his eyes, and he asked for mercy, didn't he? And the end of this story is that the man, if you read it all, the man that with the high profession and deflecting off on the person that came in just at the same time as he did, the one with the high profession didn't go down reconciled with God that day. But the man that humbled himself with the Lord didn't come in with any big high profession. The one that said, Lord, I'm desperate. I need something. I need some goods on my hand, on hands. He's the one that went down to his house justified before the Lord. Profession. Profession without possession is just like a bucket with a rotten bottom. It's a bag with a hole in it. It does not do us any good. I want to be a Christian that's more than a bumper sticker, more than a decal. A few years ago, I bought, not just a few, it's been a long time ago now. it was about 2002, so that's a long time ago for some of you. I bought a camper because it had bunk beds in it, and we thought we needed that type of camper for our family. And I don't even know if my wife recognized it or not, but on the bumper, the back bumper of the camper, it had some, I call them bumper stickers. They were decals that had been put on two or three places of different dirt track racing events. And so, I don't remember what they were, but they, I bought it in Oklahoma, so it was probably someplace down there, and I didn't know where they was at, and I just didn't get around to taking them off for a long time, too many years, really. And I remember taking it to, you know, I just, it's on the very back. I wasn't paying much attention, and it wasn't, I didn't put them on there and all that, but I remember the first time I took it to camp meeting, set it, parked it there at the campgrounds and walk around the backside maybe to get something out of the storage compartment or something. Here's these bumper stickers like I go dirt track racing. And it was like, that's not me. That's, I'm not, I don't even know where these places are. And I felt every time I realized, well, I ought to take a razor blade and cut those, you know, scrape them off or something. Because I didn't put them on. That's not who I am. And yet, somebody probably saw that and came to a conclusion, right? Of some sort. I don't know if they did or not. Nobody ever came and talked to me about it. Maybe they prayed for me. I don't know, but nothing ever happened like that. But what my thought here is that there was something being portrayed there that I wasn't me. It wasn't who I was. But yet it had the appearance. But it was empty. It was hollow. I want to be able to have something to where others know who I am without the stickers. I want them to be able to recognize that this is real. This is, you know, the story I told you about my dad. I want people to know there is some strength of character. There's some, I don't want to have to explain to somebody that I'm a Christian and they look at me and say, you know, I never would have guessed. I don't want that to happen. So I want to have something that's real, something that is put, I want to act the way that people can say, oh, yeah, I understand now. You know, your behavior definitely backs that up, if they didn't already know. So I'd like to go to 1 Corinthians and notice what Paul said, Apostle Paul said, 1 Corinthians chapter 15. And I want to notice verse 10. We're just kind of skipping around and not reading a lot of stories today, but I'd like to get a point here. 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 10. The Apostle Paul says in this verse, but by the grace of God, I am what I am. And His grace, which was bestowed upon me, was not in vain, but I labored more abundantly than they all. Yet not I, but the grace of God, which is within me, which was with me. Excuse me. Paul realized how important it was to have the possession and not just the profession. It's so important for us to come to the, you know, I would like for there to be 100 people, I'd settle for 50 right now, that said that they believed that they were part of this congregation, professed to be part of it. But I will tell you, I'd be a lot more happy if there was 50 here every day, every service. You know, put something in the in the works. And he says here, by the grace of God, I am what I am. It's by His grace that we are able to live in a manner that others can see what it means to be a Christian. in our everyday life. To be a Christian is a high calling. It's not something that we should take flippantly. It's not something that we should consider take it or leave it. It's a serious directional change in life. We should not consider it less than a serious commitment. I'm making a serious commitment to say that I'm a Christian. I want to live. I want to behave myself. I want to conduct myself in a manner that others cannot just say, oh, well, you're a nice person. But no, we want to be able for others to see Christ. We want to be able to... The other day or other evening, I was just, I don't know, this is not a startling, innovative idea, but I just was outside after the sun had went down and noticed how bright the moon was. And I thought, you know, to understand that that is a reflection of the sun shining from the other side of the earth. And just to know that light that's up there, it's not a light of its own, but it's a light that's a reflection of the sun. And when others can see the illumination of Christ in our life, and we can be like a moon, if you want to take it that way, and reflect the light of God into the little world, the part of the world that we live in. When you get on Google Maps or some other map source and you type in a specific location, and you know the little tiny dot that it is, even in our United States, and then you begin to zoom in and zoom in and zoom in until you can finally read the name on the streets. And I zoomed into my little hometown recently and realized they've named some of the new streets in this old town after people that I knew. Like, people that I knew and shook their hand and all that, and they've got a couple streets named after them. And it's like, that makes me feel old. But, you know, I had to really be able to zoom in to read that. And we don't have, I don't have a very, very big sphere of influence today or any day. But when I am, what I am projecting and what I am reflecting, does it look like a Christian or does it look like something else? Do I have some kind of flag run up that says I'm a Christian and yet I'm acting like a little devil or something? Or am I acting like a Christian? Do I have to even have a flag? You know, when it comes time to... you know, people have expectations for us. And when they see us make changes in our life to reflect more and more of Christ, you know that they will respect that. I'm thankful we still live in a country that if you go to bow your head at a table and offer thanks for the food, you know the waiters will stop in the restaurant. Your coworkers will quit talking a lot of times. They'll give you a space to offer thanks, and then you can enter into all the conversation you want to. But, you know, if you quit doing that, they're going to ask a question. I wonder what happened. I wonder, are they not a Christian anymore? I don't know if they ask that complicated a question, but... You know, they come to expect, do we really have it? Do we really have the possession? Or do we have to constantly remind somebody that we're a Christian? I'd like to turn to Psalms 149 and verse 4. And notice what the psalmist says, 149 and verse 4. He says, "For the Lord taketh pleasure in his people. He will beautify the meek with salvation. Did you know that salvation, when it's truly possessed, will shine? It'll bring a glow. It'll bring strength. It'll bring value that nothing else will. When salvation is possessed, when salvation is professed, and it's really not possessed. You ever heard of cat food and dog food being advertised by how it makes the coat shiny and thick and all of that of your furry friends? You know what will happen if you really got a good dose of salvation? There's going to be some shininess come out of you. There's going to be some health. There's going to be some vitality. There's going to be a glow. There's going to be some energy. There's going to be some positive things that come out of you that others will look on and say, I want some. What are you feeding that dog anyway? what do you got down inside that makes you able to be content, to be happy, to be able to be joyful, all of those kind of things? I want to have it. I don't want to just have a profession. I want to have it. Real possession demonstrates real value. If you have the real possession, then there's going to be a real value that comes out of that. If you don't have the real possession, you're constantly going to be struggling to see the value in it. And it's not going to look valuable to somebody else. I wouldn't want somebody to pick up the trade that I do and think that it's a losing profit. You know, I had a guy. I worked for a fellow when I was in high school. Worked for him for a year and a half, 2 years in high school. And I started working there thinking that there might be a chance. He don't have any sons. Maybe I could learn the trade and maybe buy his business. I started there with that thought in my mind. And after about a year and a half of working for him there, it was like, I got to get out of here. Because every time, one of the things he told me, and this was probably the last straw, was if I was a young man going into the working world, he said, I don't really know what I'd advise him to do, but it sure wouldn't be working on cars. That's what he said, and that's what I wanted to do. So I left, and here I am still working on cars. My wife's been able to stay home and see after four boys, and the Lord's helped us. And I feel fulfilled in that section of my life. But you know, if I'm a Christian like he was in his field of work, would anybody else want to be a Christian? Probably not. They want to run away. I want to be a Christian where somebody comes along and says, hey, I'd like, is there any way I could come and work with you? I was thinking the other day how many young men have went to work with me over the years. Had somebody come up to me at Monarch a year or so ago and said, hey, you remember that day I went to work with you? And he was rattling off things that we did, and I totally forgot about it. But he didn't forget about it. It made an impression on him. You know, I want to live in a manner where people know that I possess something. We're not talking about being possessed with some kind of spirit. We're talking about us possessing salvation, about us possessing something that's real, that changes and molds our character into something that reflects the light of the Son of God. Not the sun out there in the sky, but the Son of God. I want the beauty of possession to be self-evident. Just like when the writers of our Declaration of Independence use that phrase, talks about truth being self-evident in the Declaration of Independence. I want the truth and the reality of salvation, of Christianity, to be self-evident. I don't want to have, you know, I know somebody today that their whole vehicle is covered with scriptures and warnings, and they're like a mobile billboard. The whole car is covered with this stuff. And it's like, there's a profession there. Does he really have it? You know, I would rather have something that's self-evident. It's evident because possession is there. The strength that my father had, it was self-evident. It wasn't because he went around bullying other people. It was, I saw this on a first, other people saw this. I want people to be able to witness, because as the psalmist said, he would beautify what? The meek with salvation. He'll beautify your life. Wherever you are, he'll beautify you with salvation. If you have the real possession, there's going to be something that's going to start coming out. It's going to be in the shininess of your disposition. It's going to be in your overall spiritual health. There's going to be something that's going to start exuding out of you that others will be able to recognize. And you won't have to have a bumper sticker. If you want to get one, it's okay. All right? I'm not preaching against bumper stickers today, but make sure you've got a possession to back up a profession. I'd like to end with Psalms, the 15th Psalm. And we'll read this, but we won't comment a lot on this. I want you just to notice what the psalmist said in Psalms 15. It says it's a psalm of David, King David, a man that the scripture records as being a man after God's own heart. He said, Lord, who shall abide in thy tabernacle? Who shall dwell in thy holy hill? Who is going to be able to take up residence in your presence? Holy hill was referring to, I believe, Mount Zion. And ultimately, not only was the temple built there after David was gone, but that's in the same proximity. It's where Christ came. Christ took the place of the temple and the tabernacle. Christ is the one that is the bridegroom of the spiritual church, of the bride. And he says here, who's going to be able to take up residence there? He that walketh uprightly and worketh righteousness and speaketh the truth. Where? In his heart. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. The truth deep down inside of us, that's going to be a possession. That's going to be something that comes out. It's going to be a natural reaction. He says, he that backbiteth not with his tongue, nor doeth evil to his neighbor, nor taketh up a reproach against his neighbor, in whose eyes a vile person is contemned. But he that honoreth them that feareth the Lord, he that sweareth to his own hurt and changeth not, He that is able to follow through with his commitments to the Lord. He that putteth not out his money to usury, nor taketh reward against the innocent. Doesn't take advantage of the situation to line his own pocketbooks. He that doeth these things shall never be moved. This is talking about someone that truly possesses an experience of salvation. Truly possesses the right to be called a Christian. I want to be like that. I want to be able to dwell in the holy hill with the Lord. I want you all to be that way too. I believe it will have an effect in our world. There's a lot of possession, or a lot of profession, excuse me. There's a lot of profession in our world today. And I wonder, just how much possession is really behind all of the profession. Because profession without possession is not very powerful. In fact, if profession is there with no possession, there's serious consequences. We found that out when we read about Saul. We found that out when we read about the Pharisee over there in Luke. But when there is real possession, folks, that's how the world around us is going to be changed. It's not in just the profession. It's going to be in the possession. You pray for me. I want to be able to have the profession that it takes to make things change. You pray for me.